Welcome to the Women's Well. This is Lisa Miller on Wednesday. Happy that you're joining us. And my guest today, Teresa Berry Greb. The Women's Well is a place to nourish your health and spirit, as you know, and we're always so excited that you join us here. We hope that you find today everything that you need to get you through these remaining February days that can be so gloomy. My guest, Teresa, is a licensed physical therapist and has been for over 27 years in the Lexington community. She's also a certified emotional brain training provider and teaches Wired for Joy in that technique group. Also in private practice as a Reiki energy practitioner, Teresa is welcoming and nurturing, a wonderful resource professional in private practice right here in Lexington. Welcome, Teresa.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. So I would love for you to tell our audience, our listeners, a little bit about the path that has led you to this place of leadership in your life. I know that for many who lead in a good way, tragedy can often be a part of the process. And for you, I know this is true. I know that you talk about your childhood in your empowered teaching today. Most of the stories that you and I hear about transformation happen to be about significant loss for people that have propelled them forward. And is this something that you still talk about these days when you teach and lead the way for women?
Oh yeah, definitely, Lisa. I feel that opportunity growth is during that tragedy or that struggling through, getting through. We get to the other side and we're amazed of how much we change. And in this past 10 years of having the Facilitative Healing Center, I witnessed hundreds of women going through this transformation, coming in through a divorce, loss, grief, out of work, and changing with this container of unconditional love that this transformation happens.
Wow. And so what happened in your formative years in your family of origin?
Well, I grew up the oldest of four, so just being the oldest, you know, comes a lot of responsibility and that feeling I need to be perfect to be loved. I felt that wiring in me, and so I always stressed out to be perfect and to do my best. And these challenges of living under this unreasonable expectation drove me to be more of a leader in my family, a leader in school, and I found I was a natural leader with that. Then I can also have compassion for other people struggling with these stressful, we call them circuits in emotional brain training. When you have these stressful circuits wired in as a kid, and then to go out into the, as an adult, you still carry those unreasonable expectations, we call it in my work.
What was stressful for you growing up?
Trying to be that perfection, trying to win my parents' love. It got wired in me. I felt that I needed their approval and it was conditional, though I know they love me the best I can. And I love my parents now. Mm-hmm. I love my family and I'm very blessed, but I felt that pressure.
Mm-hmm. Like many, many kids do growing up in a culture that stresses excellence for whatever reason, and then also is reinforced in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you struggled with weight and binge eating disorder many years.
Yeah, I started a diet officially in 13 going to TOPS. And so my comfort was overeating. And so my weight went up and it would go down. It would go up and down all the time up until I did emotional brain training. And so I just feel so passionate that there's a deeper reason why we're eating to comfort ourselves. It wasn't for physical hunger, but it was that emotional hunger that I was seeking for. Comfort, numbing from the pain and the stress in my life.
And it got out of hand at some point in your, I remember you mentioning your mother taking you to
Take off pounds sensibly, TOPS. And in those days, it was the late 70s, I think, or early mid 70s.
It was called Take Off Pounds Sensibly, TOPS for short.
And so they pressured, you would be weighed in, and then you were applauded if you lost weight, and then you were judged if you didn't, if you gained weight. Mm. And so that was, again, that judgment. And so that judgment gets internalized and becomes your own inner critic. So even though I haven't done that for years, that inner critic that I wasn't good enough at whatever weight I was still lingered on into my adulthood.
And was this a group setting?
Group setting.
So there were other kids. Were they?
One other boy at the time I was in it, and older women.
Older women and one other boy. And so you're in a group setting. And the facilitators are talking about weight loss. And what else?
As far as I can remember, weight loss is what I remember at
so
that
you,
point.
You get together and the whole session would be about how overweight you were.
And how to lose it.
And how to lose it. Mm-hmm. And then shaming was a major tool.
Yeah, if you didn't, I always felt bad. And so I'd eat more for comfort throughout the week just to hide that. Mm-hmm. And I would gain more weight. So it wasn't very successful for me.
Yeah, thank goodness we've come a long way in healthy facilitation. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine a worse setting for a kid or a kid struggling or an adult, but especially a kid struggling. And you're there with all the other adults who are also battling weight issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't lose weight, then they say what?
Well, you weren't supported or nurtured. You were actually, I remember a pig, and they put a pig in front of you, if my recollection is right. And so you just felt bad. I remember just feeling awful.
Mm. So that gets wired into your psyche, into mm-hmm. your emotional processes moving forward. So this happened when you were how old?
13.
13. And stayed with you many, many, many years.
Decades.
Okay. And then, but I remember you also mentioning that your the emotional tone in your house was also stressful with family dynamics and...
Yeah, there was expectations as growing up as kids.
Yeah. And all kinds of sibling rivalries and all the normal stuff on top of it.
There's four girls.
Yeah. Okay. So you're struggling along and the weight issue just probably becomes worse.
As you get older, it fluctuated. I could be rigid and keep my weight and lose it, but then I would gain it back.
Mm-hmm.
When something stressful came under my life, I would gain the weight back because I would eat for comfort.
Right. So comfort. So and eating issues, disordered eating issues are so much about control. Was mm-hmm. that accurate for you too at the time?
Oh, yeah. I get my safety from control was my expectation, my unreasonable expectation.
Mm-hmm. So you would maintain some strict eating policies, and you would maintain your weight for a while. And then as soon as a stressor showed up, what would happen?
Yeah, that would go out the window. Part of the back of my brain would say, eat it all. Eat it now, Teresa. Chocolate. Eat it now.
And a lot of it.
And a lot.
And we can laugh about it now.
Oh, yes.
Because we've both been there.
Yes.
We've both walked that ocean. It does feel like walking an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It really does feel like the impossible. But you managed to go on to college
mm-hmm.
and PT school.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening with you in your life as you're moving forward with still this baggage of this emotional pain?
Mm-hmm. Well, it still carried with me unconscious for most of my life, young adulthood life. And then 1995, I went to a workshop by Jeanine Roth, When Food is Love. And that was my beginning of my journey of healing, my relationship with food. That it was more than just about eating. It was about what was my brain thinking it was giving me? And really bringing up those feelings and processing them out.
And so what did that look like there?
Oh, crying, a lot of crying, a lot of tears. Just feeling the feelings that were not safe to feel as being younger.
Mm-hmm.
So learning through Jeanine Roth and other teachers in my life, spiritual teachers, through emotional brain training was really specific and giving me tools to process those feelings out in an effective, healthy way and letting them go.
Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to tell us about emotional brain training, and we're going to get there.
Okay.
So you said 95, no.
1995
was my... Mm-hmm. with Jeanine Roth, mm-hmm. who is one of our pioneering eating disorders, mm-hmm. healthy body image and wellness goddesses.
Yes.
Right? And
totally agree.
So what led you to take this intensive with her in the first place?
I just wanted to be different. I just wanted to get off that rat wheel of losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight. And so I just made the first step. Me and my mother actually went together for a weekend up in Cincinnati for a weekend goodness. Workshop.
She was in Cincinnati?
Yes.
Oh. Lucky. Mm-hmm. So 20, 30 years have passed at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're still struggling, like many adults, many adult women.
At this point, I feel I have much more tools than I used to have.
Yeah, but I mean at that point in 95.
Oh, in 94. Yes, definitely. Yes.
And so you have this really mind, body, heart altering experience. Mm-hmm. And you leave there changed in some way?
Oh, definitely. Definitely cracked open. My heart was cracked open. I was able to feel more than I ever had felt in a healthy way. Mm-hmm.
And what did that look like for you in your life? How was that suddenly different?
I started looking at myself with a little less judgment, giving myself a little more grace, giving myself a little more compassion at that point. That maybe I was good enough.
And what did that mean?
And maybe I didn't have to be a size of 128 pounds to be good enough. That maybe at this weight I was good enough.
And this fostered by Janine, the long weekend with Janine mm-hmm. Roth. What was it that she was teaching that gave you this message?
That she said that look at why we're eating in a non-judgmental way, just with clarity and observation. What is food really representing in your life? What are you missing that you think food is giving you? And for her, she was mentioning love and comfort and safety. And that resonated it with me.
That resonates with me, always. And how did your mother feel about it?
I think she enjoyed it, too. We were there together, learning the same tools.
Mm-hmm. And you had a family by this point. You were already uh-huh. you already had a young mm-hmm. family.
Yeah.
Did you feel you were different with your family?
Yeah, I was. I felt that the more I became in balance with my eating, the more I became, that I could be more of a loving mother. And I made mistakes, believe me. You can ask my children. But they're still wonderful in spite of it.
Mm-hmm. If we put all our children in a room together, they will all agree none of us are perfect, mm-hmm. But that we're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
But what I hear you saying is that it was so helpful to have finally a group support system that told you it was okay. You were okay exactly the way that you were. Mm-hmm. Compared to what you had experienced in that group setting 20 years earlier as a teenager, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. shamed for not being some arbitrary standard. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's 1995. You mm-hmm. have this experience that breaks you open and mm-hmm. propels you forward. And then what happens?
Well, one of the situations that you can look at that might people see was the traumatic event was my mother-in-law moved in our house, and she didn't know at the time, but she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, gallbladder cancer, and then passed away in her home, and that was in February of 1996.
Mm. Wow. What kind of toll did that take on your children?
Well, they were small at the time. They loved their grandmother and loved her being there and loved her reading. There was a blue chair that she would sit and read to them, and they loved it. So it was very hard on them. It was hard on us as a family. But we were so blessed to have her in our family, too, during that time. We really got to enjoy her being her loving presence with us during that time, that stressful and challenging time.
And how long was she with you altogether?
6 months.
6 months, okay. Mm-hmm. So then what happens? Is your sister
The accident.
In a tragic accident by uh-huh. this point?
No, that was in 17 months later, okay. in 1997, same day Princess Diana died, mm-hmm. in 97 in August, that Labor Day weekend, that my sister, we were a year apart, she was in a tragic accident that her husband was killed that day, and then she has been in a minimal conscious state since then for 18 years. She lives now in a nursing home in Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And she had two small children. My niece and nephew are 3 and 18 months. And so we brought them into our home the very next day, took them in.
And became part of your
Yeah, our family.
Your family.
Yeah.
So your sister and brother-in-law and the two small kids are in Michigan, I believe. They were in Michigan. They were going out for a picnic.
Yeah.
And broadsided by
a truck.
By a truck. And your brother-in-law was instantly killed.
Yeah, very shortly that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the children and your sister survived, but your sister has remained in a coma for 18 years.
A minimal conscious state, yeah.
And is she here in Lexington now?
In Louisville.
She's in Louisville, okay. And you've raised her children. So just before that, just a year or so before that, almost 2 years before that, you found this inner strength that you were okay the way you were, that there was nothing else you had to do or be. And that empowered you in your health and wellness and your consciousness, I understand. And then this tragedy happens. Did you feel in some, while completely devastated, that there was some part of you that could truly handle this because of the empowerment you had processed and experienced earlier?
Well, it depends what brain state I was in. So a lot of times in that stressed out five state, I was, you know, stressed out, overwhelmed. But then a part of me knew that somehow I was going to make it. I couldn't see how, couldn't see anyway, because 2 weeks after that accident, I lost my job as a physical therapist. The company went bankrupt and stole my 401k plan.
Oh, my goodness. Stole your 401k
yes.
plan?
So,
wow. It really pours when it rains in your life.
So at that point, not having any... that was challenging, but somehow I held on. Faith, prayers, just loving support from my family and friends. Oh my gosh, they were there for me. They were there just encouraging me on even when I couldn't see it. So their love and their support is what got me through too.
How did you feel them?
Oh, they'd send cards. They'd help me watch the children. My neighbors would take them. My sisters would take them to give us a break. And just people just encouraging.
And you could feel the prayers.
Oh, we could feel the love.
So vital. So vital, especially when people are in crisis and friends don't know what to say or do. They're afraid of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. What was the greatest comfort to you when people would actually call you or talk to you, come over?
Well, for me, it was just when they were just listening to me, just being that loving presence. When they, I would be ranting about what the stressful moment of the day was, and they would just say, it'll be all right, Teresa. And they were just that reassurance, that stability that I needed.
It really takes so little to be so much as a companion for someone going through something so devastating and difficult. Valuable for all of us to remember. You just have to show up. And as you say, just listen.
Yeah.
Hold a hand. Just be there.
Yeah, me and my husband got closer, you know, just more nurturing, supportive of each other to get through it. And the kids have done wonderful, loving each other.
And how old were your kids at the time of this?
Mine were 5 and 4.
Tragic accident. Okay, 5 and 4. And your sister's kids were how old?
3 and 18 months.
3 and 18 months. So your kids are 5 and 4, and your niece and nephew are youngins, and you've now adopted them into your family. And you've just lost your job.
I know. It's amazing that I can sit here and laugh about it, because back then it was way overwhelming.
Well, isn't this perfect for us to revisit and laugh over now? Because so many listeners are walking through difficult, challenging life events now. But knowing that this too will pass, not to take it lightly, but to have faith that this too will pass means so much. And here we are all these years later laughing about it.
I know. And the family's wonderful. We love each other, and the kids are awesome. They're doing so incredibly well in their own path.
You're listening to WLXL LPFM Lexington. You're here at the Women's Well with me, Lisa Miller, and my guest today, Teresa Berry Greb, a licensed physical therapist and certified emotional brain training provider and a energy worker who truly embraces what it means to be compassionate, kind, and to help lead the way for women who have walked a difficult path or are walking a difficult path. Teresa's talking about her experiences that have paved the path for her leadership, and one of them about how many years ago now, Teresa, was your sister's accident?
1997, Labor Day weekend.
Okay, so I can't calculate it
right now. 18 years.
18 years ago, good. When one is hosting the show, one cannot also do math. Unless one is the CPA. But over 18 years ago, a tragic accident that left her sister in a semi-conscious state and tragically killed her brother-in-law, Teresa took in her niece and nephew and has raised them as her own children, having walked through her own challenges to that point. So at this point in 97, you're now a growing family, and you, mm-hmm. you have your 18-month-old niece.
Nephew
mm-hmm. and your 3-year-old
niece
mm-hmm. and your own children. What is your plan? Did you in your head, you lost your job. Did you and your husband sit down and say, what are we going to do? Or what happened?
I think it was just getting through the day back. If I remember correctly, it was just if I can get through the day with everybody getting showers and getting ready for school. And then at that point, it was decided, I worked also at Midway College as an adjunct professor at that point. And so I chose to continue that job, but not to pursue any job because of the stress of the family, just getting acclimated to 4 children, going from 2 to 4. And so my husband works at University of Kentucky. He stayed full time there. And that was what we decided.
Okay. So you're just in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
As many people are with 4 children. But on top of it, you're dealing with the aftermath of the family tragedy. And so what were you doing at the time to help you deal with that?
Well, this is when my spiritual path took off. And so in parallel to the tragedy, the week before the accident, I started my first Reiki energy class, the weekend before.
Mm-hmm. Will you explain to listeners
what
Reiki is?
Reiki is universal life energy. It's ability just to guide energy for balancing out the body. There's energy, 7 energy centers within the body. So it's a way to balance out the energy within myself. And then if I work with someone else, helping them balance out their energy. So I started that the week before. And then after the accident, this accelerated my spiritual path. Part of it to find out if I could help heal my sister, and part of it for my own sanity, giving me support that I needed for this journey. And so it started with Wayne Dyer work, Deepak Chopra, all the Marianne Williamson, and was just led to their work and to practice and to take in that work.
And their work is about what?
A spiritual practice about being love, about being present the moment, the power of presence, and the power of compassion and kindness. And then went even further work with Carolyn Costin and Francie White and Anita Johnson, Eating in Light of the Moon. And so following their work even deeper. And so all the tools and skills that I collected throughout my own training, I use it for my facility.
Mm-hmm. So you're using, and were you using local therapy at the time as well? All the leaders that you mention are renowned authors, speakers, and healers. Did you have a local source for yourself?
At that point, no. It was hard in 95. There wasn't very many mm-hmm. in Lexington.
Yes.
And that were following this path.
And now,
oh, there's
look
so
at us.
Many. Oh, it's so abundant.
So, but wasn't it such a help to have even the books that you were reading mm-hmm. and the authors who could speak to you? Were you reading or listening?
Reading, listening, going to workshops. Carolyn Mace was another one, too. Mm-hmm. So going to her workshops, going to Eckhart Tolle's workshop, going to week-long retreats with Carolyn and Anita Johnson and Francie White. So all these trying to just take in as much as I could.
And it started to help you heal.
Mm-hmm.
especially in the face of this tragedy. Mm-hmm. And your husband would stay home with all the kids?
Oh, he would. He was a godsend. I could never have done it without the love and support of my husband, Steve.
Okay. So now we're at the point where you have found your support team.
Mm-hmm.
And you are healing more deeply. And you mentioned Carolyn Costin and Francie White, mm-hmm. who also are leaders in healing eating disorders and body image issues.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you learn from them in particular? Because I know they mentored you.
Oh, yeah. I learned totally having total unconditional love for your body, no matter what size, what shape. Having compassion for your body, having compassion on this journey we call life, and not to be so hard on ourselves, to be gentle with ourselves.
And this is important. We're talking about this because all of the struggle has led you to become the facilitative healer that you are today. And it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, if you were to look back, if you were as a child to look forward at all the challenges that would befall you before you could become a leader, would you agree to do it?
I don't know.
You know,
they say you sign up before you come into this earthly body. So
you know, I was at a conference with Carolyn Mace in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
My sister and I flew to Seattle to hear her speak for a weekend. So we're at the conference with hundreds of people. And she said, when you're a baby and you have no idea what is to come, and you grow up and you look at the people who surround you in your family life, in your professional life, in your community, in your country, you look around and you suddenly go, who are these people? If I had known ahead of time, I never would have agreed.
Yeah. It's just like that looking at an acorn. If you pick up an acorn in your yard, you can't imagine that someday it'll be a 100-foot oak tree.
Right.
And so it's about enjoying the journey. We're always changing. We're always transforming to our bigger, better selves.
Mm.
We're always evolving.
This is a perfect place to take listeners into the next phase of your experience and leadership. We're going to go to a PSA first, and we will be right back.
Era muy sensible a luces y sonidos. A veces hacía las mismas cosas una y otra vez. Un día me enteré que tenía autismo. Mi familia me buscó ayuda y poco a poco aprendí a vivir mejor con ello.
Mientras más pronto se diagnostique, mejor. Conoce las señales en autismspeaks.org/aprende. Presentado por Autism Speaks y el Ad Council.
You're at the Women's Well with me, your host as always, Lisa Miller, and my guest, Teresa Berry Greb, a facilitative healer, certified in emotional brain training, licensed as a physical therapist, and a practicing Reiki energy healer. We're talking about all the challenges that pave the road to leadership professionally and pave the road for deeper healing personally. And Teresa, you've had a fair share, as many of our listeners have. She's laughing. And we're talking this hour about the fact that we can laugh because it is all part of it,
mm-hmm.
right? What's your laughter about, Teresa?
Well, as Laurel Mellon, who's the creator of Emotional Brain Train, says, you don't want a vanilla cone life. You don't want an easy life growing up because you need to have that chocolate mixed in. You need those challenges because that makes you stronger for your next challenge down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Looking back, I didn't like going through it, but the wisdom and knowledge and strength I gained going through that has made me the person I am today.
Mm. And who are you today, would you say, when you think about yourself?
Well, today, mm-hmm. it's hard to put a name on it. My own personal goal is just to be a loving presence the best I can in the moment for people, no matter who I meet. Now, sometimes I practice that real well and hold that loving presence. Other times, not so well, but that's my intention. And so I like to call myself now an evolutionary coach, someone that helps people evolve through those challenging situations and is on the other, at the end of it saying, yeah, you can do it. You can make it. You can get through this stressful event in your life. This is going to make you stronger. And just to be a loving presence with them, to, you know, just to walk the walk with them.
Evolutionary coach. I like it. And you own the Facilitative Healing Center here mm-hmm. in Lexington. Tell us about the offerings at the Facilitative Healing Center.
Well, the Facilitative Healing Center, we are a mind-body-spirit place. So we want to integrate each one. So for the body, we offer therapeutic massage, Reiki energy work. For the mind, we offer emotional brain training, or the Loving Journey is our new program. And then for spirit, we offer ability doing energy work or intuitive readings, energy readings. Okay. And Reiki can also work with that too. Mm-hmm.
And so you were healing from all these tragedies in the 90s, mm-hmm. and it led you to become more interested in facilitating healing for women?
Well, because so many people were out there for me when I was going through struggles that I felt I need to pay back. People have paid me, and so I could be that presence here in Lexington mm-hmm. for people.
And there weren't many resources mm-hmm. locally. Like you were saying before our break that all of your mentors lived in other parts of the country mm-hmm. And were nationally renowned speakers. So now you provide a very direct, compassionate one-on-one service mm-hmm. for people, but you also offer healing in group settings.
Right. You can do emotional brain training groups. You can do the Loving Journey in group situation. So, yeah, and we also have I'm the co-founder of the Secular Order of Sisters, and that's a part of the spiritual part, too, is that practicing that loving presence in a group with a group of women.
Mm. Well, you're speaking our feminine language. So what is that? Tell us about that.
So Secular Order of Sisters came about in 2011 is when we were established, me and then my co-founder, Sister Marcia Jean. And so we created a place where women can just be a loving presence, to just be love, learning that spiritual path. So, and it's secular because anyone from any walk of life, any religious path, any belief, spiritual beliefs, it's just about being love the best you can. So that's our only practice in as being a secular sister, is just being love.
Okay, and you meet how often?
We usually meet regularly once a month. It hasn't been so much so often, but we're getting back together.
Okay. And so for listeners who might be interested and want to get in touch, they can find you how?
They can email me at Teresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-A, Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, Greb, G-R-E-B, @gmail.com. You can call me on my phone number, 859-494-5851. For more information.
Okay, and they can find you at www.facilitativehealingcenter.com as well. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm really interested in for listeners is the emotional brain training course that you teach.
Yeah, so that starts out with an introduction 6-week course called Wire for Joy. So the definition of emotional brain training is rewiring the brain from stress to joy. When we're under so much stress, either situational stress or our own internal stress from our inner critic, we say we're in the back of the brain called the brainstem area. We call it the reptile. But in that back of the brain, we're in survival mode. And so in that survival mode, you're in that fight, flight, or freeze mode. And so when you're stuck in stress and you don't have tools to get out, you're floundering there. And so emotional brain training provides you with tools to get out of that reptilian brain up into what we call the neocortex, the front part of your brain. It's the highly evolved, the most evolved part of the brain. Only problem, it's the slowest to respond under stress. And so what we do is teach tools of how to get from the back of the brain up to being more present in the moment in the front of the brain. Because the front of the brain is where you feel love, joy, compassion, kindness.
And where you have more perspective.
More perspective, more clarity, so and more balance.
It's the slower part of our physiology because fight flight is sending energy to all the rest of the body to take action. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Muscles get tense up. The heart starts racing faster. We start breathing faster to get ready for that fight or flight mm-hmm. response.
Yeah, and science shows blood platelets get sticky. Respiration increases with sweating.
Blood pressure goes up.
Blood pressure goes up. Hormones are being dumped in copious amounts through the entire system. Mm-hmm.
The stress hormones, cortisol, epinephrine.
And those also happen to be aging. Mm-hmm. They're very toxic and aging for the body in great amounts. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're rewiring the system mm-hmm. to not automatically shift into fight flight.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So you're learning tools at these, and there's five different brain states. So at these different brain states, you learn a specific tool to get back up to what we call one state when you feel great. So, and then staying at that, I tell people when you're in that one state, you ride that wave, honey, because you're rewiring the brain to stay up there more of the time.
Okay. So take us through it. What are the five brain states? And then we can talk about each technique.
Okay. Yeah. So the first brain state is the one brain state. And again, we don't judge any brain states. It feels better to be at a one. Sucks to be at a five.
Because at five, you're in fight flight.
Right. You're in that fight or flight. So to one, you feel great. You're present in the moment. You feel love and compassion for yourself. You feel love and compassion for others. And you feel love and compassion for all living beings. And you're present in that moment. At the two state, you're still up in that prefrontal cortex, but you feel good. You don't feel great. You're not inspired, but you still feel good. You have a lot of positive feelings, maybe a couple of essential pains in life, maybe a little hungry, a little tired, but I'm still in balance. I'm still present in the moment. At a three state now, I'm on that edge of stress. I'm a little stressed, going to overthinking mode, a little more rigid thinking. Hard to stay present in the moment. Little stories are spinning in my head. I like to look at little plates, spinning plates. And so it's like, what if this happens? What if that happens? So it distracts me from being present in the moment.
Okay. And is that also considered to be partially connected with fight flight?
Yeah, you're right on the edge.
Okay. So even though you may not be sweating profusely, your blood pressure may not be up, the fact that you have anxiety and worry mm-hmm. means that really technically and logically and truly, you're in a fight-flight state, on the edge of fight-flight state.
You're just starting, yeah. Okay. If one more thing happens, I'm going to lose it. That's that state. When I'm one more thing.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, and then if that one more thing does happen, you go down to the reptilian brain. And the reptilian brain, in that four state, we call definitely stressed. And how I know I'm definitely stressed, I start judging myself. I start judging others. I have these unreasonable expectations in the back of my brain that start getting triggered, like, I have to do it all. My needs don't matter. I'm not perfect. I'm not good enough. And so when those get triggered, we go into that stress mode. Mm-hmm. So then you drop further is the last state, and okay. That's brain state five.
Okay, and before we go there, so the unreasonable expectation state, I want to explore that for a minute
okay. Because
it's such a biggie. No matter our past experiences, positive and negative, we become exposed to beliefs and expectations that then wire who we are. So you could, an unreasonable expectation can pop up today at age 46 mm-hmm. with a genesis from age 5.
Yes. Most wiring actually occurs before age of 4. And we take it hook, line, sinker because we don't have a neocortex to even see if that's even healthy or not. We just believe everything we're taught. Mm-hmm. Especially early on, those are first 3 years of life.
Okay. So it's in there. Deep mm-hmm. tracks somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then something happens in present day mm-hmm. in your adult life that triggers you. Mm-hmm. And how does that, what happened when you were 4 or 5 suddenly become so real and present?
Yeah, because those feelings get fired back up. Oh, I'm not good enough. And so maybe guilt comes up or shame or anger or sadness. Those feelings will come back up. Especially if we find ourselves overreacting to the present situation, that's when you know an unreasonable expectation's been wired. Because if I'm overreacting, oh, something got triggered deeper. Because this shouldn't really cause me this much stress, mm-hmm. this present moment situation.
Okay. So how does a person know if she is overreacting? Because for her, it's just normal reaction.
Well, Usually someone around her might think, usually that loving presence of someone else. Aren't you overreacting to the situation? No, I'm not. Then you know.
Okay.
So you might not personally be aware of it, but people probably around you are aware of it.
Okay. And even those not so loving around you may be aware of it, right? The guy,
right.
The guy next to you at the in the pharmacy in line,
mm-hmm.
you're having a bad day and it's beaming out of your pores.
Mm-hmm.
And he reacts. He's triggered too.
Yeah. Our emotional brain has no walls. We will feel other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So we can sense when someone's having a good day. We can sense when somebody's having a bad day.
Mm-hmm. So someone who you don't necessarily know who tells you you've reacted or responded inappropriately is also important information.
Yeah, they're feeling it.
Even if it doesn't come gracefully.
Right.
It's information. Okay. So that's brain state number four.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. Again, we don't judge it. I still get there even after 10 years of doing this work personally. And then the next stage is the brain state five. And this is when you're in full-blown fight, flight, or freeze mode. So the brain either wants to run away, it wants to attack and defend itself, or it feels stuck.
So the brain wants to do this, but the body carries it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it can happen when? Changing a flat tire, your kid calls and is having a problem, you're late.
Any situational stress, and even internal stress, our self-talk can cause us to be at a five state. And so that's when an inner critic can wreak havoc on our emotional brain by telling us we're not good enough, we should be perfect, measuring us to some external standard that no one can achieve.
Okay.
So that's the brain state five. Again, you're in that fight or flight state. So in that fight or flight, we want to be right. We want to be reassured and we want to be heard.
So what happens?
So usually in a five state, we want to be right rather than be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be reassured because we're terrified. So we want somebody just to reassure us, it'll be okay. This will pass.
Isn't it interesting how thoughts create beliefs and action?
Yes, very much. It creates our reality.
Creates reality. It's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
We could have created all the stress we're experiencing, and there's no external need or validation for it.
Not at all. I've told myself a lot of irrational stories in my past.
Don't we all?
Mm-hmm.
So you said something that really resonates. Whose state is accurate? If in the state of five, mm-hmm. when we're totally stressed out and in fight flight, is not matching necessarily reality all the time,
mm-hmm.
What is the clue that there is a level of appropriateness to activity, actions, or experiences?
So that's when that clarity of getting into, at least you have one little strand up here in the neocortex to be awareness. Oh, wow. I'm overreacting. This really isn't that bad. So that's called a check-in. We go up to that prefrontal cortex and really check in to say, is this really reality? Or is this me telling stories in my head again? And so the tool for that state, when you're in that stressed out state, is basically reassuring yourself. Do not judge. I will not judge myself or others. Do not harm or minimize harm. And this will pass, that reassurance. Because that five state, we want to harm ourselves, we want to harm others. It's a very destructive state.
What would self-harm look like in this state?
Oh, self-harm could be many different forms. Self-abuse like cutting or overeating or not taking care of our body, you know, just destructive behaviors
mm-hmm.
that over time can cause the body to get out of balance and become ill.
So, and I'm asking because listeners will hear cutting in the same breath with overeating and think that the two shouldn't be necessarily in the same boat, but binge eating or starvation or even calling up the person you're mad at and yelling at them
mm-hmm.
is also self-harm.
It's harm, yes, self and for the other person.
Okay.
And so it's a continuum. So you have to look at all these harms as on a continuum of how much damage they do either to myself or to others. And there's extremes on, you know, on either end. I can go so far as to kill myself or go so far the other way and harm other people that I kill them. But there's a whole lot of in between that we can find ourselves in.
Okay. And also in that boat would be just getting in bed and staying there and tuning out the world. That is also self-harming.
Yeah. Too little sleep, oversleep, either one.
Okay. So there is a range of experiences in that brain state number five that is characterized by fight, flight, panic, anxiety, and self-harm, as you mentioned. Okay. Now, let's get to the good stuff.
Yeah. So the good news is we can rewire our brain. Now, the older you are, it takes a little bit more time because they've been laid down, like you said, those tracks a long time. But the research shows we actually can create new neuroplasticity, new neural wiring, if we repeat it over and over in the practice. So we can change these negative internal thoughts into positive, loving, self-supporting thoughts, balancing thoughts.
There is a lot of research out there today.
There is a lot of research.
Science and medical research that supports this theory of neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now what happens? So take us through it. Someone's in a five state. What is, and they're in panic mode. What is one tool in addition to this too shall pass that people can use?
Yeah, it's called the damage control tool. So it's do not judge, minimize harm. No, it will pass.
Okay.
It's just a wire.
And then is there a specific action associated?
You can do a physical. So you can imagine just taking your right hand over your left shoulder and your left hand over your right shoulder and just giving yourself a nice big hug, just like a mother would hug their little child, and reassuring yourself, this will pass. This will pass. And just feeling that tactile reassurance.
Okay. Some listeners are going to say, that's just baloney. That's not going to work for me. I'm in such a panicked state in fight flight that just hugging myself isn't going to work. What do you say?
I say, then you find what works best for your brain. Whatever, if it's holding your hand, if it's stroking your forearm, if it's going into a bubble bath, whatever you need to do. So it's about learning your brain, because everybody's brain's a little bit different. Everybody's brain responds to these tools a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is you learn your own brain.
Okay.
That's how we evolve, is we're learning our own brain, and then we have power. We have power to change the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And we never thought we did before. No one's ever taught us we had power to change our brain or change our belief systems.
Okay. Change the brain and change the belief system also calms the body.
Yes.
So what about going for a walk?
Yes.
Walking the dog.
It releases endorphins. It releases dopamine. It relaxes the body.
Okay. Putting on some music.
Wonderful.
Calling a respected confidant.
Yes.
All of those things are tools, actual
yes.
tools. Okay. Getting on your yoga mat if you practice yoga and breathing.
Yeah, going because if you go to that yoga mat, the body remembers what it feels like to be on that yoga mat.
It's a neuro association.
It's a neuro association, right?
With relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then what?
And then you just keep working up those brain states until you get to a one. And then you just ride the wave when you're one for as long as you can, because stress happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a technique that helps you check in with yourself periodically about how you're feeling.
Yeah, at least 10 times a day.
10 times a day, so that it's self-regulatory.
Mm-hmm.
So someone else isn't giving you a pill and saying, this is going to fix it. But really, each of us is empowered to regulate how we're feeling and what we're needing.
Yes, and that's intimacy with myself. Asking ourselves, like a circle, how do I feel and what do I need? So if we keep asking those two questions throughout the day, we can stay in balance the best we can amongst the situation you're in.
How do I feel and what do I need?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it recommended to practice this 10 times a day?
Because that reptile brain thinks it knows it all. And it just wants to keep you safe. It just wants to keep you survive the day. It doesn't care about being happy or being joyful. It just wants to make it through the day numb. Or it wants instant pleasures like quick hits. We call them external solutions. Quick hits. And so it runs unconsciously. Now, I heard from a neurobiologist, the back of the brain does 20 million interactions per second, takes in that much information and processes. The front of your brain only takes in 40 pieces of information per second. Therefore, the dominant part of the brain is the back part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And so it wants to make things unconscious because it's easier for it to do it. It's mm-hmm. harder to be conscious. Mm-hmm. It's harder to be present in the moment. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot more energy to be present in the moment than it does to be in autopilot. And so we're trying to break up that autopilot with repetition of being in the front of the brain, doing a check-in. How do I feel in this moment? What brain state? What number am I in this moment? Mm-hmm. Again, without judgment, mm-hmm. we all get to 5. But then what do I need to get back to balance?
Okay. So often spirituality is connected with a conversation about consciousness. Mm-hmm. What I hear you talking about is a scientific, physical, physiological, medical, day-to-day useful way to talk about consciousness.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's all about being present in the moment. That's the most power we have. It's just this present moment. We can't change anything that's happened in the past. And really can't change anything in the future. But we can make choices in this moment that can influence our future.
Mm-hmm. And so when you are talking about getting back to balance, in terms of the 1 to 5 states of the brain, mm-hmm. which are you referring to?
1 and 2.
1 and 2 are balanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the mind's in balance, it's relaxed, it's at peace, it's not doing stories spinning in my head. The body's in balance, it's relaxed, it's not tense, it's not overly tired, it's not hungry.
Okay.
And that soul, you know, that spirit, mm-hmm. and we're feeling that unconditional love. At a 1 state, we can feel unconditional love. Even at a 2 state, we can. 3, it becomes a little more conditional love. 4, it's definitely conditional love. Mm-hmm. And 5, I've tried for the past 10 years. At a 5 state, I cannot feel any love. I want to cuss or kill.
Right.
So I cannot. So at a 5, I challenge anyone out there. If you have 5 state, you can find love.
Right.
But it gets cut off for me personally.
I took this course years ago with you, I think. Uh-huh. Right? Did I take it with
yes.
you, Teresa? And it was great fun. You know, but I pull from such a variety of boxes to build up my tool set. So mm-hmm. it's been a long time since I've used these skills. But hearing about them again, I'm thinking, yeah, they just make so much sense. I know that when I'm at what you call a level 5 brain state, mm-hmm. That I tend to think of as overly anxious and stressed out. I know that that is not the time to have the conversation with the person I'm irritated with.
Yeah.
So I no longer allow myself, even though I feel really righteous in that moment, I'm right. And this is a righteous decision. And there's no way anybody could argue with the truth of this. I now know better than to hit send on that email or to dial that phone number.
Yeah. If you don't learn anything else on this phone call, 2 5s, never good. 2 5s barking back and forth each other. Nothing usually ever good ever happens. Mm. So just to be a loving presence, realize you're at a 5 and just lovingly leave until you feel
okay.
better.
In other words, if you're stressed out, just wait until you are back in balance to take action. Okay. So you have created additionally a course, and tell us about it.
Yeah. So this has kind of evolved from EBT. And so this is about a loving journey. Like, what is it to be in this 1 state, and how do we really stay in that state for longer periods? And so these are a course that's come out of my training throughout all my years of practice, and that really just being love is the most powerful transformational tool, because it creates this loving resonance energy that you and anyone around you can feel, and feeling that total loving, unconditionally accepted transforms things. It's magic sometimes when you see it, especially in a group. People just open up to their new potential, and people lovingly facilitate that just by being that presence. And that's where the transformation occurs.
Okay. And what is this course called?
It's called The Loving Journey.
Mm-hmm. And how many weeks is it?
It's there's an intro, and that's 12 weeks.
Okay.
And then there's an advanced course right now going on that's 12 weeks.
Okay. So each is 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what can people expect to learn in the intro?
Well, in the intro, they just learn basically about the first 6 weeks is about loving yourself unconditionally, really feeling that loving, unconditional love, mm-hmm. that acceptance, feeling compassion for yourself, feeling that, giving yourself forgiveness.
And what sort of tools would be involved?
So on a typical group, if doing the group situation, is that you practice meditation. And then you do different group activities. And one of the most powerful ones is called soul eyes. And so soul eyes is when you look deeply into someone's eyes. We have the group up standing and you kind of mingle. And then you catch someone's eye and you just look at them very deeply with no judgment, no expectation, and just holding that loving gaze.
We're doing that right now.
Mm-hmm. You can feel the power.
I love you, Teresa.
I love you, Lisa. And so that, for some people, are very scary to let people in, because some people believe the eyes are the window to the soul.
Yeah.
And so we just had our second group start last night, and they're like, you know, the first time you had us do this 12 weeks ago, we didn't know what to expect. And they said, now it's so easy, because they've trained their eyes to look to be people with love and compassion instead of this eyes of judgment, of inner critic eyes. So when we perceive the world with our inner critic eyes, all we see is what's wrong with the world. If we see the world with loving our soul eyes, we see how much love and compassion is out there. And it's training us just to see the world in a different way. And that's just one practice.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate you turning out a bunch of people who will look at me lovingly if I run into them, even if I don't know who they are. How many people in a group generally?
No more than 8.
Okay. And when is your next group starting?
Well, there's a free 2-hour workshop coming up on March 5th at the Facilitating Healing Center for 2 hours in the afternoon, 2 to 4. And it's to basically just talk about the 5 practices of a loving journey. And so this is just free, just open. People are just curious. And so we start with that. Just if this speaks to you, and it's shifting your fear-filled life into a loving, passionate life. And then the incredible changes that happen in just 12 weeks are incredible.
Who doesn't want that? If this resonates with you, listeners, you can find Teresa Berry Greb at facilitativehealingcenter.com. And her phone number, 494-5851, area code 859. There is another course that you teach called Wired for Joy.
Mm-hmm. And that's the intro. That's a 6-week for the emotional brain training. So emotional brain training, 6 weeks to learn the check-in tool, the 5 different brain states and the tool for each state. Then the deeper work is another 9 months, the advanced EBT. And that's where you break down each reward and go into it deeper, really rewiring those deep, unreasonable expectations we have in our brain that are unconscious for most of the time until they get triggered.
Okay. A lot of options.
Yes.
For women who are seeking healing in a deeper way for themselves, mm-hmm. or in a most basic way. Do you work with men as well?
Yes, I do work with men. Yeah.
Okay. And are they part of the groups that you offer?
Uh-huh.
Okay. But there are some groups that are just for women.
Yeah, the Secular Sisters at this point.
Okay. And listeners can find about all this information on your website, facilitativehealingcenter.com. I'm so grateful you've been here today with me at the Women's Well, Teresa.
Oh, Lisa, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it so much.
In our remaining minutes, who are the women you would say thank you to?
Oh, gosh. Thank you out there to all the women who've been important to me in my life, all the mentors and my mother, first of all, my sisters, my soul sisters, my solstice sisters. I have a lot of sisters out there, my Hawaii soul sisters, just everyone. We're all on this journey together, and we all need to be a loving support to each other. That's where we really will heal the world.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you.
Until next week, listeners, this is The Women's Well with Lisa Miller. I hope you have a beautiful day.